3653. If there was confusion about starting time today, it's all on me. I mean, I screwed it up multiple ways. I went totally ADHD or whatever the hell it is today. I went into StreamYard and I set the time up wrong, but I set the time right at TSPC Live. Did a promo video today. Haven't done that in a long time. Telling people about it. Telling them it was at 11. But then the actual on the platform scheduled for noon. And then I fixed it and changed it to 11 p.m. So if you saw that little quake, that's what happened. Anyway, what are we going to talk about today? Restoring America's health with real food. And this is a subject we haven't breached in a while. We need to go back to it. If you saw my promo video today, I made a promise. This is not a you need to be keto carnivore seminar. Not at all. There is a part of it where we're going to talk about carb restriction, but we're going to start really, really high. Like most people wouldn't even consider it restricted until you start thinking about how many carbs the average person eats in a day, being well over 300. In fact, I did some research and found that the average person, so this is you and everybody else in the line at the state fair getting a deep fried, you know, pickle pretzel or whatever, 400 plus a day. 400 plus carbohydrates a day. That's pure sugar. And that's part of the problem. But this is really, we're not going to focus today on carbs other than it is a piece of your meal plan, right? Or what you're going to eat or your way of eating on a daily basis. We're going to try to make this a soft adjustment for folks. I look at it this way. My country is killing itself. We are killing ourselves in a variety of ways with like nefarious mental programming and taking it in and accepting the bullshit that they feed us. We're killing ourselves monetarily, both from a monetary standpoint, from a monetary policy standpoint. We talked about that a lot yesterday, but from a personal monetary standpoint, we're killing ourselves. People piss away all their money. They have nothing to show for it. They buy shit that degrades in value. There's like multiple forms of health, mental health, financial health, physical health, etc. And all of them are mostly, not 100%, but mostly driven by behavior. Yes, your government sucks at money management, but in many ways, so do you. Yes, your government sucks at nutritional guidance, but you know your government sucks at nutritional guidance, and yet you choose to have poor nutritional habits. What has this resulted in? It's resulted in a country where one of the leading medical issues that we have that costs us more than $1 trillion a year is completely avoidable. And that, of course, is type 2 diabetes and all of the problems associated with it thereof. The majority of people that are on dialysis or on different stages of kidney disease, yet not quite needing dialysis yet, are due to obesity and diabetes. This does not have to be the case. And when we look at the total causes of death that aren't old age, like I think once you're over about 85, no matter how you die, if somebody drops a piano on your head, we should just say it's old age. Like there is a, I don't know if 85 is the right number. If you're 87 and listening right now, don't be mad at me. You're probably not, because you can think probably more clearly than a lot of young dumbasses. But I think there is a point where you say, okay, like over this age, it's kind of expected at some point we're going to check out. But under that age, the leading causes of death are all directly related to diet in our country. And if we let cancer into that, which we probably should, then it's not even close. And so we have this issue of, let's say, just cost of health insurance. Why is health insurance expensive? Because healthcare is expensive. Why is healthcare expensive? Because everybody's fucking sick. Because people literally have like personal relationships with their team of doctors now. And the reason they do that is because, well, they pay a lot of money for health insurance, either directly or indirectly. They feel like they have it coming to them and they're all sick. So they run to the, like no one actually, except for like maybe some weird people, want to like hang out at the doctor's office, right? It's not like, you know what I want to do on Thursday? I don't know, man, go out and get a beer or like, you know, go fishing or no, man, I want to go hang out with my doctor. Like you guys are buds, you're going to watch TV or something? No, I'm going to go to the office and get my ass probed, right? Like, nobody wants to do that, yet we spend so much money and time inside a system that we really don't want to be in. It's directly attributed to the fact that we're unhealthy. And there's something funny about physical health. And there's a lot of you out there in this mindset. I have other problems. I have emotional problems. I have mental problems. I have physical injury problems. My life's just not right. I work too hard. I work too late. I can't do all this. I can't fix this because insert bullshit excuse here. My goal today is to take your bullshit excuse, show you that it's bullshit, make you smell it through smell-o-vision over the internet or over the audio, make you smell how bad your own bullshit stinks, and make you say, I have had enough. I don't want to make excuses anymore. Because let me tell you something. You guys are like, I need to get myself emotionally or mentally right. Fix your fucking diet. That'll go a long way. It won't be everything, but it'll go a long way to fixing that. I have injuries and I can't really work out. Fix your fucking diet and your inflammation will go down. Your injuries will recover at least some. And then you can start physical training to fix that injury up. Right? I don't make enough money. If you were healthier, then you would be able to cope with your work environment better. And the number one way to do that is the food you put in your mouth. Like, I'm going to tell you flat out, there are some of you out there, if you do everything right and you hit the gym every fucking day, you're never going to look like a bodybuilder. You're never going to really look super toned, right? Genetically, you lost that one. You're going to look okay. You're going to look better than you do, but you're never going to look like the dude with the ripped 8-pack, right, and the super pecs, right, or whatever it is that you would like to have. It doesn't matter. The number one thing that impacts your physical fucking health is the food that you stick in your food hole. It's more than working out. It's more than any of it. Now, there's value to exercise. There's value to physical training. There's value certainly to lifting heavy things and doing weightlifting. All of that has value. What I'm saying is the single biggest factor is the food that you eat. So that's what we're going to talk about today. We're not going to talk about working out at all. I'm not going to tell you to get up at 4:30 in the morning and go work out for an hour like John Willis does. We're not going to talk about taking supplemental hormones. We're not going to talk about any of that shit. All we're going to confine this to is what you eat on a daily basis. And here's the best part. It's going to be easy if you wanted to. I'm going to give you various levels that you can enter into a new eating pattern from. And it's going to be something that if you say, I can't do any of that shit, there's only one reason you don't want to. You're not ready yet. You're happy being miserable and you don't want anybody to take your misery away. And you'll have to figure out why that is. And I think there are a lot of people, and it's a subconscious thing. Whenever you start talking to them about improving their life, whether it's improving their diet, their exercise, their financial health, whatever, it's excuse, 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 excuse. And excuses, of course, are like assholes. Everybody's got them, and most of them stink. Okay? In fact, all of them stink. And so there's always something you could be doing to improve your situation. And when you shoot down all those things, I'm starting out with a little bit of asking today because some of y'all need it. What you're actually saying is, I don't want to do this right now. I don't want to. And if you're saying you don't want to do something that would improve your problems, what you're actually saying then is what? I want my problem. And I know some of you are really mad when you hear that come out of my mouth. I know you are. I understand that you're mad. Doesn't mean it's not true. In fact, the reason you're mad is because it is true. Now, you may, again, it may be subconscious. You may not realize it. But we have turned into a society of victim mindset. And there are a lot of people that they identify who they are with what they are, and that includes the negative. So to say, I'm not going to weigh 400 pounds anymore, or 300 pounds, or 250, or whatever it is for you, that is to say goodbye to a part of yourself. And if you're really overweight, if you're really unhealthy, then for a long time that has been who and what you are. And that has to die for you to be reborn into something new. And that's scary. Do it anyway. Do it anyway. Because if you don't, you're going to contribute to the statistics. And I've met enough of you to know that a lot of you are. And if I hadn't changed my life about 7 years ago now, I guess 6 years ago now, I would be in the same place you are. So I've been through this. I understand it. And I'm going to try to convey that to you guys today. If you have any questions during this episode, it is imperative that you follow the program, right? If you're in the live stream, that is, of course. And that is, you put the word question as the first word with all caps. If you don't do that, I'm guaranteeing you I won't see it. I'm guaranteeing you, doing this on my own. I've got some paperwork for part of today. One person that has one good eye, I'll miss it. That's the only way I'm going to see it. Word question in all caps, and then give me your question. And then if you have details, give me your details. If you're asking about something we're specifically talking about in the moment, I'm going to star your question. I will answer it at the end, and therefore I may not remember what your question is too. So in reference to, or something that anchors it back to what you're talking about. It's not just this, like, but what do you think about blah, and it is no connection to anything else, and then I don't really know how to answer it. So please try to do that for me if you can. And those of you that are here now and hearing all this, as people come in later and you see them ask a question, they don't follow the format, let them know. Because I probably won't notice that they screwed up and I won't remember to tell them again. I'm having a little bit of an off day from an ADHD standpoint. So anyway, before we get into all this, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day today. Sponsor of the day number one today, you can definitely eat even if you're restricting carbs. That is Anton's Land of Biltong, Biltong, USA. Check it out. Anton is from South Africa. He knows how to make biltong the traditional way. They've also got some really cool dry sausages there. The Kalabanazi, the Drew Wars, both of those are among my favorites. And something called sticks, STIX, which are basically little, hard, overly dried pieces of biltong. I like to cut those up with shears and eat them in little pieces at a time. Freaking excellent. All of it's delicious. Anton is a sponsor who I actually take product from as payment because I love it that much. Check it out today at Biltong USA or Anton's Land of Biltong. Both of them will get you there. Next today, JM Bullion. You know, I talked a lot yesterday about economics and the problems that we have, and I said that Bitcoin should be part of your strategic asset acquisition, and it should. This does not mean that I am not a fan of silver and gold. I am not all in on this or all in that. I believe in actual diversity. Silver and gold have been monetary instruments for a very long time. Silver has industrial demands that are what we call inelastic. There's a lot of reason to use this as a wealth storage mechanism. And it is a truly anonymous form of wealth, and you can hand it down to your descendants either after you're gone or even before you're gone by going here. And no one needs to know. I'll just say that has some advantages as well. And, you know, silver and gold are liquid in many ways throughout the United States, right down to going to a pawn shop and selling off a small amount if you happen to leave a little bit of cash for a while. I'd rather you sell a little bit of silver and get through something than do some kind of stupid like a payday loan on your DeWalt drill and lose it. And then you know what you've done, and if you want to replace it, you pay yourself back by replacing the metal. That's just one option that it gives you. So make sure you're insuring or assuring your wealth. Precious metals, wise investments, good debt balance, all of it, but PMs are definitely part of it. All right, so now let's get on into this. And I'm going to talk about diet in this issue, but I am not talking about diet as something you do to torture yourself. I'm not talking about a diet being something you do for 6 weeks or 8 weeks or 12 weeks or whatever the fuck in front of a magazine at the front of the grocery store told you to do. I'm talking about habitual nourishment consumed as a regular matter of living for any living organism. We all have diets. And what we unfortunately have is diets that are very divorced from our natural diet. And if you want to know the results of that, all you have to do is look at animals that are kept as pets. If you go out into the wild and you look at animals that live in nature, not in a park where people feed them peanut butter, you will find no obese animals for their type. I've said this before, but an elephant looks pretty fat, but for elephants, they're exactly what they're supposed to be. Hippos, even though they look fat to us, they're exactly what they're supposed to be. They're not obese. Raccoons are not obese if they live in nature. You know, and you think, well, they have to like find their food. Well, there's a lot of animals in nature that have no trouble finding their food. Buffalo are not fat. Grass is easy to find. Squirrels have plenty of shit to eat. They're not fat. And when we find an animal that's fat and sick due to its diet, it's always one of two things. That animal's in captivity, or it's eating our garbage, right? Or it's being fed by well-meaning people who should know better. It's always one of those three options. It is never that this animal simply overate itself into obesity. You don't find fat lions. Well, they have to run all the time. No, they sleep more often than they run. They're very good at what they do. When they're hungry, they kill something and they fucking eat it. They kill so efficiently that we have a whole group of scavengers that comes and eats what they leave behind, because when they want another wildebeest or antelope, whatever, they just go kill another one, yet they're not obese. Go to a zoo, especially a zoo that's not well run. You'll see obese animals. Why? Simply be, it's not how much the animal's eating. It's not the animal's behavior from a standpoint of like exercise, right? It is a direct function of the food that goes in their food hole not being the food that they evolved to eat. This is our biggest problem. Genetics do play a role in how people respond to various foods. There are people like me. If I let my carbs start to come up even a little bit over like maximum net 50 a day, and that's all clean food, I start putting weight on. As we go through some of these different options, you're going to see there's plenty of people out there that can get rid of the crap, and that's it. They don't even worry about their carbs, and they get healthy. All their labs, they don't just get thinner, right? All their labs balanced, their A1C, everything balances. There are people that they have to do that, plus get under 100 carbs, which I'm going to show you today how non-restrictive that is, okay? Yeah? But there are people that maybe need to be more restrictive. There are people, again, that can eat a diet primarily based in carbs if they leave the junk out and they're really healthy. And don't tell me about, you know, I can do anything and you're 25. Well, you're 25. Right? There's an aging thing in here too. To really judge this as just a straight genetic thing, it's about your mid 30s where you really start to notice that you're fucking up. Genetics play a role, but it's not an excuse. It's never an excuse. And what you'll always find is the person that says just genetics, right? They're not doing any of the shit we're going to recommend today. They're not doing the most liberal form of eating that I will give you today in just a minute. Never. They're always eating Cheetos and Ho-Hos and ding-dongs and then blaming genetics. I'm sorry. No. No, 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 no. Not at all. And Scott King, I see the word comment and then no words. So if you have a comment you want me to comment on, you have to have the words that go with the comment. Anyway, moving on. Body weight is also not the only measurement of health. But it's an important one. It's an important one. Adjusted to the reality of your frame and who you are and how you're built. So, for instance, the United States government, if you just look at straight up my height, says I'm supposed to weigh, to be optimally healthy, 165 pounds. When I got out of the Army in 1993, and I wasn't quite 21 years old yet because I joined at 17, and I was with the United States Army Airborne, and I did PT 3 days a week with the company, and I worked out 3 other days a week on my own. Okay? So you're 20-year-old, you're in the military, you're training heavily on a weekly basis, and I was 178 pounds when I got out of the Army at 20 years of age. So at 53, I am not going to weigh what the government says. But when I weighed almost 300 pounds, that was clearly not really the government's fault that I was overweight in any way, shape, or form. It was mine. So, you know, an ideal weight for me is probably a little less than I am right now. It's probably right around 190. And I'm a little heavier than that. And part of I'm rebooting some of my things, and that's why I'm doing the show today, because I like to talk about what I'm doing. But that is a reasonable weight for a person of my frame, of my shoulder width. I mean, I also wore a 32 size waist jean when I was in the Army, and I wear a 34 now. Like, I am never going to be what the government model is, but there's still a reasonable body fat. And by body fat right now, I am fit for my age and my height and my measurements, I'm fit. But it's up to you to determine that for yourself. The weight is important, but things like your basic labs that Ken Berry teaches are important too. And I'm not worried about what your cholesterol is in of itself. I'm worried about things like your small cell, your small particle triglycerides. That's way more important to me than your cholesterol. Cholesterol is a myth. High cholesterol equals unhealthy. That's a myth. It's bullshit. The sheath that protects your spinal cord is made out of almost 100% cholesterol. Almost every bit of connective tissue in your body is made out of mostly cholesterol. The things that make you able to function and not die are made largely out of cholesterol. This is another thing that pharma came up with. Hey, cholesterol, like if we can find any correlation, we'll say it's bad, then we'll make a medicine to push it down. That's not a solution. So let's talk just a little bit about the growth of chronic disease and indicators since 1970. We all know in 1971, we went full fiat with money and we went full fiat with everything, including food. 1970s were exactly when even things that maybe wouldn't be healthy got worse. So Ocean Spray was the first company that went all in on corn syrup in the 1970s. And the guy that was the project manager for Ocean Spray that made the switch over to corn syrup, his bonus that year was so big, he bought a ranch and called it the Sugar Ranch. And everybody filed suit after that. If you never drank Coca-Cola before the new Coca-Cola, like prior to when that happened, you don't even know what Coke is supposed to taste like unless you had it in Mexico. I'm not talking about the cocaine Coke from like the 1800s and shit. I'm talking about what Coca-Cola was for most of its life in America until the 1970s when they switched over to corn syrup. So there is a correlation there. 11.6% of Americans have been diagnosed as type 2 diabetics. That's 90 million plus are estimated to have pre-diabetes. So right now we're up to a point where 11% of Americans, and this is not age adjusted. This includes little kids. So you look at 10 people, one is diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. And I believe that number is actually a little bit low, but 90 million plus pre-diabetics. And this is a problem with America, with doctors and tests and binary thinking. I'm diabetic, I'm not diabetic. Bullshit. That's bullshit. First of all, type 2 diabetes is not diabetes. It's the net effect of diabetes. It fucks your body up the way diabetes does, but it's not diabetes. It's insulin resistance. Diabetes is your body cannot make insulin. Type 2 diabetics, your body, your liver is churning out. I'm sorry, your pancreas is churning out insulin. It's making it. It's making it. It's, and it's not working. It's not doing its job. And eventually it can totally go, you know what, fuck it, I quit. And effectively you become type 1. But up until that point, it's just insulin resistance. When somebody says you are pre-diabetic, think of it not like an on-off switch. I'm not diabetic. I am diabetic. That's bullshit. It's a dimmer switch. And you're getting worse the higher that number goes. If you're pre-diabetic, you're basically type 2 diabetes light. It's not bad enough to kill you yet, but it ain't good. And it will get worse unless you do something about it. Almost 1 million Americans right now have end-stage renal failure. This should be a horrifying stat that I was like, oh, that's bad. End-stage renal failure means you have to get dialysis regularly or you will die. And your only hope to survive long-term really is a kidney transplant. Kidneys don't last as long as you think they do because you watch medical shows on TV and think the kid that got a new kidney when he's 12 is going to live to be 90 with those kidneys. It ain't going to happen. That transplanted organs wear out. It's a very serious surgery. And if you give somebody with type 2 diabetes a kidney or kidneys, and that's why their first kidneys failed, they're probably going to destroy their second set of kidneys faster than they would have otherwise worn out. It's just reality. This is a chronic and dangerous situation for our country that's costing us lives. The U.S. dialysis centers market is expected to grow at a compounded annual growth rate of 5.9%. In dollar value from 2023 to 2030, it will become a $40 billion market by 2030. $40 billion for dialysis, mostly because of type 2 diabetes. And the company that makes the most money off it is called DaVita. And they're the ones providing you recipes of what you should be eating, including cranberry oatmeal cookies for breakfast through the American Diabetes Association. So there's a cabal out there to make you sicker than you already are. I won't spend too much time on it. I'm just saying. The obesity rate in 1970. Now, again, some of you are young, so 1970 sounds like, wow, that's way back there in the olden days or whatever. 1970 is not that fucking long ago. Everything we have today from us, you know, other than like the internet, right? Like everything that we have today, as far as food availability and, you know, whether you could be fat or not, like everything is basically was already there. It's not like some major innovation caused disease between now and then. It was just simply the food company switching ingredients to a large degree. It has a huge impact on it anyway. So 1970 obesity rate in America, 15%. Today, obesity rate in America is 42%. This is not okay. I'm just setting the stage for you. Global seed oils have grown in production by about 200 million metric tons since 1970. So this is what we know about the people that were around pre-1970s. They didn't eat hardly any seed oils. They consumed almost no artificial sweeteners. They consumed almost no corn sugar, extracted corn sugars. Those three things are the three biggest things that changed. Food companies also got very smart about using those to create products with what's known as a bliss point. When Lay's says you can't eat just one, it's not just a clever marketing slogan. They mean it, especially if it's like the barbecue Lay's that have the sugar added at just the right ratio against the artificial fats. This and the salt. These three things come together and they create what's known as a bliss point by food chemists. And it literally creates an addictive feeding response. So without those chemicals, plus the malevolence of the people making the food, knowing that the only way they can actually sell more bags of chips or ho-hos or ding-dongs this year is to get their existing customers to eat more per week. It is a cabal. It is stacked against you. Now, I want to also hit a few things about what do all diets, which again are systems of eating, whether they're temporary or permanent, the ones that work, the ones that make people actually healthier, where you can look at the person, it's not just labs on a piece of paper. You look at the person, you look at their face and go, oh my God, look at you. You know, when I first did it, there were people like, you look 10 years younger. I don't know with all the gray, if I still do, but there were people like, you look 10 years younger. Right? There's a certain way your face looks. There's a certain glow to your skin. There's a certain vibrance in a person. All the diets that not only help fat people not be fat, but that actually improve health and energy have certain things in common. One is they all involve whole foods. Even the person like, I eat, you know, a carbohydrate-centric diet. Like their diet is based on carbs, a little bit of fat, a little bit of protein. They're still eating all whole foods, I guarantee you. If they're eating bread, they're eating bread they made, or they're like buying some artisanal shit that's made. It's got like five ingredients at the most. It's probably got three. Okay? It's all whole foods. That's one thing they all have in common. Primal, paleo, keto, all of it is based on whole foods. The one that probably gets away with it the most, getting off whole foods, is keto, because as long as you keep the carbs in check, you'll be all right. But the reality is, most of the people that take that approach with keto end up, they say it doesn't work. And that's because you believe the net carb lie. We'll talk more about that later. And you're eating, you know, low carb or no carb tortillas or chips or crackers, and they're not. In Ken Berry's words, when it comes to net carbs, you can trust broccoli. If something truly is fiber, you are not going to have a blood insulin response, sugar insulin response to it, because your body physically cannot digest it. The shit that they put in these like modified wheat starches and shit, that shit does not work. It does not work. It does not work. It does not work. YouTube is full of videos of people with continuous glucose monitors saying this is a zero net carb or two net carb tortilla, and they eat it and boop, big old spike, because it's a lie. It's a loophole lie. But they all involve, the ones that work all involve whole foods. They all reduce or totally eliminate seed oils. You'll see that any of these diets that do work, they will end up, when you look at what they're eating, even if they're using vegetable oil or whatever when they're cooking, it's like a tablespoon. They're not eating things that have these oils and fats added to them before you even touch them. But I would still say that, like, there's enough evidence now that even if certain seed oils aren't that bad, like, I draw the line at olive oil. When it comes to oil that comes from plants, I'll use olive oil. I'll use coconut oil. I'll use avocado oil. That's about it. I'll use very small amounts of nut oils as flavoring agents. That's it. Everything I cook is cooked with butter. It's cooked with lard. It's cooked with bacon fat. It's cooked with tallow, right? It's cooked with chicken schmaltz. Those are the fats that I use. And that's what I really recommend people do. And Bonnie's saying, I don't fry except for an air fryer. You know, even that, you might use some oil on the product and because it transfers heat. Fat is good for humans, right? Fat is good for humans, especially if we don't go overboard on the carb side. Fat is one of the most important nutrients we have. I'll say this again. Again, I don't want to make this a keto seminar, but if you feed a person zero carbohydrates for their entire life, they never get one, especially after infancy and breast milk because there's some carbs there. Like once they're weaned, if a human being eats protein and fat their entire life and zero carbohydrates, absolutely nothing bad will happen to them. If you take away either protein or fat completely, that person will get sick and die. There is no such thing as an essential carbohydrate. Anybody that tells you there is a liar or an idiot, or at least willfully ignorant. Do not listen to them. I'm not saying you can't have carbs. I'm just saying if somebody tells you you need them, they are wrong. Not because Jack Spirko says so, not because Sean Baker or Ken Berry says so, right? Not because Thomas DeLauro says so or anybody else that's in the space. Because biologically, chemically, scientifically, they are wrong. It's provable, it's known, and the people that advise you to eat shit you shouldn't eat know this. They either know this or they're low-level retards you shouldn't be listening to. Enough, right? But everything that works has mostly your seed oils gone from. And again, look at all the diets that actually work for people. That you, when you go, not Weight Watchers, and I counted my points and I lost 12 pounds and now I weigh 18 pounds more. The things that have natural, organic human beings saying, this is how I live every day and this is how I look. Seed oils are almost always gone out of those. The next one is they all have some form of portion control. None of them are eat as much as you can, as fast as you can all the time whenever you're hungry. Even when that portion control is not initiated by a standard. If you eat the way that we're talking about today, and the more you restrict carbs, the more this will be true, your body over time will naturally restrict how much food you will eat. And then, you know, there's some kickers we'll talk about today, like 2MAD and OMAD, which are 2 meals a day, 1 meal a day, et cetera. As soon as you do that, you start restricting portions as well because you'll only eat so much in one sitting. I mean, you want your simple first diet, just take all your snacks out. No snacks. You get 3 meals a day, that's it. I can't do that. Then you don't care about your health. I'm sorry. And I'll leave some snacks in some of the meal examples today, too. But those are the things that they all have in common. So we need to emulate that. And they all also reduce or eliminate artificial flavors, artificial additives, addictive additives, concentrated flavors, etc. And they do that not so much by saying you can't have this, but by specifying that the food needs to be whole foods. You'd be surprised at how much of that goes away. And I guarantee you, if you go to a grocery store, randomly walk through a grocery store, pick an aisle that has boxes in it of food, right? Walk down that aisle, pick a random box. Don't even look at what it is and start reading it. And I'm going to tell you what is going to be in it. Addictive additives, artificial flavorings and ingredients, it's going to have that, concentrated flavorings, and it's going to have some form of seed oil, and in the case of at least half the products or more, it's going to have corn syrup. And so you can't eat that food. So the minute you can't eat that food, if you're eating whole foods, a lot of this comes in a line. And that brings us to our first option. Let's say you're like, Jack, you know, I looked at the shit you do. I'm not going to live on bacon and eggs, even though that's not what I fucking do. But you feel like, okay, fine. I'm not going to argue with you about it. I do want to get healthier. I'm not in this for some huge, I don't want to be making special foods, and I ain't giving up the occasional potato. I'm not giving up the occasional piece of bread, what have you. But I want to do something. What do I do? It's very simple. You, this is your diet. This is the entire restriction. No seed oils, no high fructose corn syrup, no dyes, no artificial additives. You limit yourself to 3 meals a day and 1 snack. That's it. Now, if you tell me you can't do that, I don't care what excuse you make up. I don't care if, well, I travel for work, I only get half an hour for lunch. Whatever sob fucking story you have, Margaret, I don't care. If I can't get you there, if you won't go that far, then the best thing you can do today with this podcast is just turn it off and listen to something else or watch something else. Because you've made a defining decision right there in this moment. You're not ready to change your life yet, and you're happy being sick and unhealthy, and you're fine with the fact that no matter where you are on the spectrum of health, it will be negative forward. I promise you, if you can't go that far, wherever you are, even if you think you're pretty good because you're 25 and you go to the gym, your health will progress negatively as you age. That is an absolute requirement to be a healthy person long term in life. One more time. No seed oils, no fructose corn syrups, no corn sugar of any kind. Okay. No dyes, no artificial additives, and you only get 3 meals a day and 1 snack. Anybody says they can't live that way is like completely divorced from reality. I would say that if you're not there already, there is no excuse for you not to today decide you're doing this and get your mind right this week. And by the end of the week, you're living that way. It's not even hard. You might have to cook your own meals, or you might have to think a little bit more about what you order. You might have to ask some questions. Well, you put corn oil on that? Yeah. Can you not? Like, is it prepackaged that way? Can you just tell them not to do it? If there's a little bit on the griddle, you don't have to worry about that. Don't go to that level. But you're probably going to be taking your lunch to work, which means you'll have more money to buy like Bitcoin or silver or stocks, or just save cash or buy more tools or invest in yourself in some way. Because there's no way you don't come ahead by cooking your own fucking meals. Really. I'll tell you this story again. I've mentioned this before, but a long time ago, when I still had a J-O-B and Dorothy still had a J-O-B, we were already at least eating close to this way. You know, there was the meals out that really we didn't even really think about when we went out to eat. That was like the real thing that was hitting us negatively at the time. But, you know, I would cook things for dinner, like some baby potatoes and ribeye and a salad. You know, and I would usually make enough food that there'd be some left over. So like Dorothy goes to work one day and she probably has like a 4 to 6 ounce piece of medium rare ribeye. And she's got like a little handful of potatoes. And I think a little bit of asparagus was with that, with a little hollandaise on it. Right. So she sits down to eat with everybody else. All the other girls that work in her office. She was a nurse at the time. They go down to the cafeteria. She microwaves her food and meets them down there. They all sit down to eat. One of the girls looks at the steak, focuses on the steak, and says, "Wow, Jack must be doing really good if you're eating like that." And Dorothy looks at her plate and says, "This is maybe $3.50 worth of food. You just spent $7 to eat that. And we spent $3.50 to eat this." And they all kind of hoofed. This is the very simple sea change you can make. And you'll see that lunch with several different options here would still work. Again, I'm not keto preaching at you today. So diet two. So that's your first step. You purge all the artificial shit you eat whole foods. That's it. You don't worry about portion control because that's going to happen a large degree to itself. Diet two is the same everything I said for number one, but you reduce your total carbs to less than 100 carbs a day. And still a lot of volume. You strive to eat food that's organic, grass-fed, grown locally, etc. But you do not draw a line. Like you don't have to be a purist on that. Like, but if the option's there, if you can have grass-fed beef versus conventional beef, and the price difference is $1 a pound, go with the grass-fed. If you can't afford grass-fed, then by all means eat the Capo beef. In Ken Berry's words, the worst quality hamburger is better for you than the highest quality bread in most instances, okay? So we're going to cut down to 100 carbs a day. And there's some of you already going, ooh, he said he was. Look, keto is going to be under 20 net carbs with all whole foods and not trusting packaging, okay? So we're way away from that, right? We're going to eat more carbs in one meal maybe than a full day of keto. So we're not that restricted. But what does it look like? So I put together some meals at these various levels for you so that you could get an understanding of what you could eat. Now, I'm not saying to eat this meal plan. And I try to put some variance in different levels so it's not the same thing with just cutting carbs out of it. But it can be anything. I just want you to get an idea of the volume of food you can have on a so-called diet. So 100 net carb example. For breakfast, we're going to have scrambled eggs with spinach and mushrooms. I don't like mushrooms. Don't eat mushrooms. Do something else, okay? Don't like spinach. Do arugula. I don't care. Again, these are just examples to give you a feel. Half a medium avocado and a small apple. If you don't want the apple, this is at 100 grams net carbs a day, you could eat the whole avocado and you still have room for more now, okay? Because the avocado is 6 grams of carbs. Lunch, do a grilled chicken salad for lunch on this day. About a cup of lettuce, some cherry tomatoes, cucumbers, red bell peppers. I don't like bell peppers. Don't eat bell peppers, but something else. You get what I'm saying, right? Olive oil and vinegar dressing. Total carbs for lunch, not even net, 19 grams. Total carbs. Dinner, grilled ribeye steak, steamed broccoli, a medium baked potato. You can have a steak and a baked potato on this level, okay? Total carbs for dinner, 48 grams, with a snack. In this case, almonds, about an ounce of almonds, and some carrot sticks. That actually drags your carbs up about 12 carbs right there, a little bit less because of the fiber in the carrots and the nuts. But you got about 12 carbs there. Grand total for the day on that meal plan is 114 grams of carbs. But if we go to a net carb, we're at 98. I'd prefer if you're going to go as high as 100, you don't even mess with net. Go straight to all carbs. But, you know, you wouldn't have to change much to get that meal down to 100 all in. But again, the net carb formula works for us if we stay away from prepackaged, fake marketed bullshit. Now, is there anybody in the live stream that would say, if you had to eat, if you came to my home, and I made breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I prepared those meals for you. And somewhere between lunch and dinner, I brought you that handful of, you know, nuts and whatnot as a snack. Would you feel deprived? Would you be like, man, I got to get out of Jack's house, man. I'm going to starve to death here. You probably wouldn't. So I would say that even though I gave you a diet one, there's not a person in this audience that couldn't get into that mode right now. 100 net carbs or less, and no additives, no corn syrup, no nothing. And your health will change. If you're already there, you might, and you're not happy with where you're at, you're not meeting your goals, you might need to go further. But if you're not there, if you're sucking down 250 carbs a day, which is lower than most Americans, and you're eating artificial shit, and you just did that and got under 100, The way you will feel 60 days into it, I cannot even begin to describe it to you. So now we're going to go a little bit further. Diet three. We're going to go the same diet as above. Everything we've already said, the no seed oils, whole foods only, etc. But we're going to go down to 50 to 75 grams total carbohydrates a day. Now we're getting into what I would consider carb restricted, but we're not keto. And I just wanted you to get a feeling for like, well, what does a meal look like? What does a day of meals look like? And I took out snacks from these meals for you so that we could get, you know, we could maximize what you can have for your meal. So this is 75 grams net carbs. This is what a day of eating would look like. Something like scrambled eggs and diced potatoes. That's a small amount of potatoes, obviously. The eggs are negative with spinach as well. So the eggs are negligible, nothing really. Spinach, about a cup of cooked, which is a lot smaller when you cook it. That'll get you down to about 3 grams net, 7 minus 4. And the diced potatoes, that's a half a cup of potatoes. A half a cup. That's a decent amount of potatoes when we're adding it to something like eggs and what have you. That's 15 carbs, 2 in fiber. In the end, that breakfast is 16 grams of carbs. It's not high. It's not low. It's pretty typical of what people ate in the 60s, honestly. In fact, when you saw somebody in the 60s eat a lot more potatoes than that, it's probably because grandma was saving on the egg budget. Yeah. Potatoes were used to fill you up when people were poor. That's what they were mostly used for. For lunch, okay, you're going to have a turkey and avocado wrap for lunch on this one. You need a whole wheat wrap that is not got any of the garbage in it. So either you're making your own or you're buying something really high quality. Sliced turkey breast, avocado, lettuce, and tomato. Doesn't sound so bad, does it? Again, if I provided you that for lunch when you were my guest, you'd probably be like, this is pretty good. Net carbs, 24 grams. We can cut that because almost all the carbs are the wrap. So we could sub in about 20 other net carbs by getting rid of the wrap with something else. Dinner, grilled pork chops with mixed vegetables. Here's your dinner on a 75-carb net. Pork chops, sautéed green beans, roasted carrots, and a small serving of quinoa. Net carbs for dinner, 29 grams. And that brings us to, we still get a snack. We still get a snack with that one. That's why I have this all printed out so I don't forget. For a snack, you get almonds and berries. Net carbs for your snack, 6. Grand total for the day, exactly 75 net carbs. Anybody here really think that that is like overly restrictive, lacks variety? You don't think we can come up with something totally different for the next meal? Okay, so if I also said that that brings us 50 to 75 carbs, right? So now what I want to do as I want to go ahead and say the person that's doing this diet is going to maybe make their bogey 75. Like that's the most they can have, but they want to keep it closer to 50 most days and they'll go higher maybe 2 days a week. So the 50 carb breakfast, what does that look like? How about breakfast? We have grilled pork sausage and sauteed bell peppers. Lunch, we have a grilled ribeye steak with sliced avocado and a side of sauteed zucchini. And dinner, we have roast chicken with garlic butter mushrooms, roasted carrots, and a side of sweet potato. Yeah, you can still have sweet potato. Now, how much? You're talking about a small sweet potato for this dinner, about a half of a medium-sized sweet potato. That's going to give us 20 carbs, 3 fiber. So you can be under 50 carbs a day and still have like a half a sweet potato or a small amount of regular potato at one of your meals. This is not as restrictive as people think. The next level is to get into keto territory. To get into keto territory, you need to be south of 25 daily carbs, and you need to do it consistently. Now, you don't have to do this. I'm trying to be very clear that we don't have to go this low. But again, I just wanted to give you a feel. What does that look like? Is that all you're eating is bacon, right? Is that nothing for variety and flavor? No. This would be your 25 carb day, and this is 25 net. Fried eggs with sauteed bell peppers and a side of avocado for breakfast. And, of course, you could throw bacon in that or sausage on that. Doesn't matter. Then lunch, grilled ribeye steak with sauteed green beans. Dinner, pork belly, roasted asparagus, and sauteed mushrooms. And that particular meal plan, and maybe I'll publish this so you can, you know, download it and use it for whatever thing you want to. Oh, you can also have a small portion of winter squash, like roasted pumpkin or butternut with that, and that will give you that day 24.5 grams net carbs. That's keto. Keto is not as restrictive as people think, and almost everything in every meal could go into the 25 carb a day thing. It's just a matter of controlling the portion relative to the carb. And if you're in a carb restriction, whether it's 100, 75, 50, 25, if you're hungry, eat more protein. eat more fat. Add a tablespoon of butter. It's incredibly satiating. Good quality butter. This is, again, this is not hard. Then, you know, you can go from there down to ketovore. Ketovore is where you're almost carnivore. The only things that you're eating other than meats are going to be things like some greens, maybe some berries, herbs, and things like that. And then carnivore, if we go all the way to carnivore, all foods come from something that had a face and nothing else except, you know, shellfish. So I don't know if an oyster has a face, but it's just a good basic rule. Because I see people all the time, and they're on social media, and they're asking questions like, well, can I have honey on carnivore? No, it's sugar. And it's from an animal. It's not the animal. You can eat a bee, but you can't. Can I have raisins on carnivore? No. I don't know where some of this stuff comes. What about broccoli? Like, if broccoli's healthy, it's healthy. You can have it. You can do keto or some other level of carbohydrate restriction. But no, you can't have broccoli and be carnivore. And I don't know why you would really want that, other than maybe people like to torment people like Ken Berry and Sean Baker by asking them that question. Just let's see how riled up we can make them this time, right? But carnivore, technically, you wouldn't even be using like pepper. Like, salt and meat is pretty much what you're eating. As far as salt, it's a mineral, and it's a necessary mineral. So it's not something like pepper, which is plant derived. It's a rock, right? You're eating a rock. And animals, including carnivores, when they find salt, will consume it. So your most like carnivorous animal you could find is like a lion or a tiger, right? They're not eating carrots, period, right? There's no carrots for them to eat. They kill and they eat what they kill. And they eat bone and guts and organs and fat and skin and meat and all of it. And if you throw a big rock out in the area that a pride of lions is, that rock won't last long. If it's a rock of salt, they will lick it till it's gone. So that's your carnivore diet. Now, you don't have to do anything past what you're comfortable with. If you're comfortable with starting out, I'm just going to purge all the artificial ingredients and eat whole foods only. Do that. But let me explain what that means. That means you're not going to the grocery store and buying a great big bag of cheap pre-created cheese, because when you read the ingredients, it's not going to just be milk, right, and enzymes, right, and cultures. There's going to be other shit in there. So you're going to have to read your label. And you're going to also have to decide, like, on quality level as well. Like, but you're not going to be eating, you know, the Velveeta. You're not going to be eating the cheese that you open with the individual slices with the little cellophane wrap around it. That is not cheese. That is a cheese-like substance, right? So you're going to have to think a little bit more, but it's not really that big of a deal. Now, here's some kickers you can add to any diet. These are things that will up your game no matter what level you bring yourself into. So number one would just be no snacks. Whatever your meal count per day is, that's it. And I promise you, you can get past that little bit of hunger between breakfast and lunch or lunch and dinner. And this is the funny thing. The more you're doing, the less bored you'll be and the less it'll be a problem. I remember when I used to work outside plant construction work. And even though I was a supervisor, I would get right down in the holes with the guys with the jackhammers and running the directional boring equipment and the excavators and all. And there were times I'd have finally people go, boss, hey, are we going to take lunch today? I'm like, yeah, we're going to take lunch today. What time is it? And they're like, it's 2:30. I'm like, oh shit. Sorry, guys. Like, you know what he told me? And I didn't, like, you don't even think about eating. The more physical your effort is, the less you tend to think about eating, which you would think would be the opposite. So last weekend, I did a 24-hour fast. One meal a day is a 24-hour fast by its very nature. I didn't even realize I was doing it until I was like, well, shit, we ate at 6 last night, and it's 4:30, and I've been out hauling shit to the garden all day, and I'm not even that hungry. I can wait another 90 minutes before I eat, and that'll be one meal today. I didn't even think about it. So if I can go all the way around the loop without saying, like, today I'm doing a one meal a day, it just happens. You can get from breakfast at 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock in the morning, until lunch at noon without something to eat. And you can get from noon to 6 or 7 or whatever time you eat dinner without something to eat. You can eliminate the snack. It is amazing what happens. Just eat clean, no snacks. The next thing is going into a TMAT or an OMAD. And this doesn't have to be all the time. I'm going to be probably a TMAD today. I have not eaten yet. It's noon. I've had 2 cups of coffee. If you want to count the cream in that, it's less than a tablespoon a cup, so it's 60, 70 calories of cream that I've had for the whole day. I probably won't eat until I'm done, have the show wrapped up, so we're talking 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Dorothy and I are paying attention to this, so we will absolutely drop dead, eat dinner by 7. That way we can keep a window of about 20 hours between the meals. So we're having a 20-hour intermittent fast on a daily, ongoing basis, right? That's a very simple thing to actually do. And Carson right here is saying, boredom driving a semi-truck is my downfall. I completely understand. And so I'm glad you brought that up. I'm saving most stuff for the end. Again, make sure you put the word question or comment in all caps if you want me to get your stuff at the end. But the boredom thing is something that, so when we're bored, we then want to fill that boredom. So then what we need to do is find something else to do. And that's easier said than done when you're sitting in a truck driving. But I don't know if that is, I want you to stop listening to my show, Carson, but maybe it's listening to an audiobook or something while you're doing that, or working through a problem in your head, or having a conversation with, ChatGPT. I showed you in an episode a few months ago how to do that, where you can literally talk to it. If we get our mind engaged in anything, the boredom subsides and we find that we're not hungry, we're bored. The other thing I'll tell you is 2 things you can do to help suppress appetite. Well, I'll actually give you 3. One is not completely devoid of calories, but is sip a good quality broth. And I don't consider that. I'll say as much as you fucking want, I don't care. It's about 10 calories to a serving. 10 serving, 100 calories. It's not even going to hit your BMR unless you're guzzling a gallon at a time or something like that. So BMR, by the way, is basal metabolic rate. So we all actually burn calories doing nothing. Like if you lay flat on the ground, whatever amount of calories your body is consuming, and you can look up and calculate that, that's your BMR, or your basal metabolic rate. That means if they put you in a medically induced fucking coma, that's how much your body needs to like not degrade and rot away, right? That's how much they put a tube and stick up your ass so that you don't die. That's your BMR. You stay under your BMR, you're still in at least a what you call a semi-fasted state, okay? But if we can keep the mind engaged, and physical engagement always keeps the mind engaged. So if you're not stuck in a truck like Carson is, take a walk. Take a walk. Take a walk around your office if you're stuck in an office. Stand up at your desk, et cetera, things like that. Not so much just to get healthy, but to do something, right? So TMAT or OMAD. So OMAD's 1 meal a day, and you can be all the way at the top, the level 1 diet I gave you, which is just whole foods only and get rid of the shit and do an OMAD. And you can do that once a week. Now, what you'll find, this is what you'll find. The more you restrict the carbs and the more you become fat adapted, right? And the more your body is drawing from fat as a dietary mechanism, and protein secondarily, and carbs last, with the sugar your body needs being made through what's known as gluconeogenesis, which means your body can make all the sugar that you need, because your body does need some sugar. It can make all the sugar you need from protein. That is an energetic and on-demand process, meaning your body's not going to expend the energy beyond its need. So this idea that like 40% of your protein will become sugar is nonsense, because the body will not expend the effort unless it needs the result. So you can pretty much eat all the protein and fat you want. The more protein and fat, and especially the more fat you eat, the easier it is to do this, which tells us something biometabolically about ourselves, that when we're giving ourselves the things we most need, which is fat and protein, that our satiation and our ability to go longer between meals gets longer. And this makes perfect sense, because the way the human being evolved was we killed shit and we ate it. We chased away the lion and we ate what he left. We broke open the bones and it sucked out the marrow. And those are very high caloric and very high nutritional meals. And therefore, they gave us the energy that we needed for the duration to the next food source. Where most of the carbs that humans consumed prior to agriculture was this, walking around picking shit up and stick it in your mouth. And certain times of the year, what you can find is almost never a time you can't find anything, unless you get super northern climates. Central Pennsylvania, second season small game. So we're talking second season deer season. So we're talking between Christmas and New Year's, right? Up on the mountain, if the snow had melted off enough, you could still find tea berries. But how many calories of tea berries were you going to eat? You would never walk. You would never find enough tea berry to get enough calories to pay the debt of your walk. So we just simply evolved to go long duration on these animal-based protein and fats. And again, if you just go back 10,000 years, and then that's the majority of human existence, whether you think that's 300, 500, or 700,000 years, or whatever you number you believe, we were here a lot longer living that way than the way we do now. And even in the last 10,000 years, it's only the last couple hundred years where you could like go to a store and just buy your shit. Like, you had to get by with subsistence one way or another. So TMAD, OMAD, and again, the more you restrict your carbohydrates, the more you'll be able to do that. But you can do it with anything. And again, it doesn't have to be all the time. You could do OMAD one day a week and get benefits from it. And Bonnie is saying right here, the cellular repair of the body begins at 15 to 18 hours of fasting, but kicks into high gear at 72. Not a bad idea to do a 24-hour fast at least once a month if your medical health allows it. I completely agree. And again, just an OMAD is a 24-hour. And it is about 15 to 18 hours that autophagy will start to kick in. So if you're doing a 2-meal-a-day, 4-hour window most days of your life, you're spending a little bit of time in autophagy every day of your life, or at least every day that you do it. And it is amazing what that does for you as well. And then there's this big history, right? So I'm just going to keep going because we're going to get to fasting. I have that as a separate window. An eating window of even 8 hours a day. So that gives you 16 hours. So whether you do 2 or 3 meals with that, if you just simply give yourself only 8 hours between your first calorie and your last calorie, you're already a hell of a lot better off. When we get into fasting, 1 to 4 days, I've never done more than about a 36 hour, like a day and a half. And so it's up to you how far you want to go with that. But I also do most days a week, I'm on a 2-meal-a-day and sometimes a 1. But as Bonnie said in that comment, it is at about 72 hours where you go into like what'll happen is you get into a point where you're really, really, really hungry, and then it'll dissipate. And when it dissipates, it's almost like you're hyper alert, hyper aware. And this makes sense from an evolutionary standpoint. If I've gone 3 days without food, what's going to happen is my brain starts kicking into solving a problem. I need to kill something. And make no mistake about it, that was the human solution to that problem. Something's going to die, and I'm going to eat it. I'm going to turn over a rock, and I'm going to club a snake, and I'm going to eat it. I'm going to go into a creek and pull an oyster out, and if I'm at least far enough along to understand what fire is, I'm going to throw it in there because it tastes better that way, because I don't have horseradish and cocktail sauce and beer yet to go with it, right? So it's going to taste better steamed, and it's easier to get the damn thing out of the shell, and it looks less like a booger. So I'll throw it, you know, throw some pine straw over it, light it on fire, and when it pops open, I'll eat it. So it's not always clubbing something or stabbing something or throwing a spear at something. But that was the human solution. I'm going to kill it. I'm going to eat. This requires problem solving. So we evolved metabolically that when we're in that fasted state for a certain amount of time, we kind of go into this, we become more predator and less prey in the way that we behave. And that's good for a lot of things. That's not just good for your diet. Like, that's good for, like, your mental acuity with work and problem solving and things like that, because we need new ways to engage the brain because we're not so worried about killing something anymore. I mean, hunting, even hunters, we have seasons when we're allowed to kill things. Even homesteaders, we can't go killing an animal every day. There's no sport in it anyway. Here, duck, 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 whack. I mean, we're only going to take as much as we need to fulfill the needs of our family and ourselves. But fasting is a huge thing we can do. Exercise, obviously. We're not talking about exercise routines and stuff today. You like, my favorite workout is a heavy bag. It's a full body workout and it's relatively quick. I can get a hell of a workout in a anybody tells you you didn't go 20 minutes straight on a heavy bag is either on the juice, like some sort of super specimen, or lying, right? I can't go 20 straight minutes, just on and off, but the whole workout, really heavy, 20 minutes. And I can get a better workout in 20 minutes on a heavy bag than most people can get on 40 minutes doing a lot of other things. I would say other things that are extreme, total body, rowing machines, amazing workout, right? But just take a walk. Just take a walk. And whatever pace you walk at normally, just walk a little bit faster, right? And like some of you guys are, you're like, it's like you're wogging when you're like walking from one desk to another. So you people, like, you can just stay at your speed. But the average walking speed of a human, take it up 10%. Huge difference, not hard, won't wear you out. And, you know, then keep increasing the speed. But if you're going to use walking as an exercise, let's not pretend we're walking when we're wogging or running in walking format, like competitive waggers or whatever that shit is. Like, if you're going to run, run. But if you're going to walk, walk and keep picking up the pace as you condition yourself. Find a place with hills, right? That will increase. I don't care, though, if you work at an office and you're like, I don't have any time to work out, but you get an hour for lunch. Find a mall or a Home Depot or a Lowe's or whatever. It doesn't matter that it's 5 below 0 or 105. At lunch, take your small meal, eat it quickly, and go for a fucking walk in a store. Make laps. Get the health app or whatever and see how many laps around Home Depot it is to make a mile. Walk a mile a day at lunch. If you say you can't do that, I don't believe that you actually want your life to be better. But I don't have a Home Depot. Find something. But get some exercise in. Meditation. Meditation is incredibly valuable from a physical health standpoint. It's also a value to deal with that boredom issue that we talked about earlier. Learning to enter a meditative state. This does not always mean sitting under the Bodhi tree in the lotus position with your fingers up like this and going om and contemplating your navel and the existence of man in the universe. Right? It doesn't have to be that to be in a meditative state. I will tell you that when I'm fishing, I get into a meditative state, especially if I have a fly rod. That metrodome, I guess, what is it called? The thing that the musicians use that goes tick, 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 that thing. Is it metrodome? That doesn't sound right. Maybe that is right. But that kind of that flow, definitely. You know, when I am in a deer stand, especially if I'm archery hunting, and when you're archery hunter, something weird, like all your, like we talked about with not eating, like all your senses, that metronome. Okay. That's what it is. Okay. But there's something like that happens where like your predator instinct goes up, and it goes up to the point that you're sitting there. You don't smell anything. You don't see anything. You don't hear anything. And all of a sudden you go, there's a deer here. I know it. I don't know how you know it, but you know it. That is a meditative state. When I am walking and I'm thinking about my next show, I get into a meditative state. So full on sitting quietly, breathing, controlling your breath in traditional meditation, whatever that is for you, that's two. But some sort of meditative state that separates you from the day-to-day drudgery. This makes anything you're trying to accomplish, including controlling what you eat, easier. It also helps, like, okay, now I'm bored and I want to eat. You know, I'm going to meditate for 5 minutes. It doesn't have to be a big laborious thing. And again, you figure out what that meditative state is for you. All of these things help no matter what you're doing. Now, let's be flexible. Let's talk about being flexible so we don't have to be the pain in the ass person. I can't eat that. I can't eat this. I can't eat that. We've all had people like that. You go out of your way to make something special for them because you know they're a pain in the ass dietary person and they still won't, like, we don't have to be that way. You know, if it's really just Thanksgiving and mom made some really great potatoes, shut the fuck up and eat the potatoes. Right? It's not that big of a deal, but we'll get to like not letting that become regular. But first of all, if you fall back to whatever, like let's say you went, let's look at my levels here. You went with diet 3 and you have limited your carbohydrates to 50 to 75 grams in a day. And you're going to make something and you're like, you know, I really want a little extra potatoes with this and it's going to be 95 carbs today. If that is not a regular occurrence, it doesn't even matter. It really doesn't. If that's once or twice a month, it doesn't really matter. If it constantly occurs, then just be honest with yourself that that's the level you've chosen, right? But if you fall back a level here and there, you don't even sweat it. Don't even worry about it. It doesn't matter. That's my opinion. Watch your weight, right? This is another way that you'll realize that I'm slipping, I'm not tracking, I'm not paying attention. You put that pair of pants on and you were so happy that a couple of weeks ago they just buckled and it didn't, you know, you didn't have to suck the gut in. And you're like, you have to suck the gut in a little bit today. You probably let something happen. And you should probably evaluate it. Weighing yourself, when you're in a weight loss situation where you're trying to lose weight aggressively, I recommend weighing yourself once a day and tracking your weight. And don't get upset when you went up a half pound a day. And don't get too excited when you're down a half pound a day, right? You're measuring it over time, but you're doing it every day to create an accountability to yourself so that you stay on point because you're readjusting your life. And you also know if what you're doing is working. Like, if it doesn't work in the first week, don't worry about it. But if you went to level 1 and you're a month in and you haven't lost a pound, you need to look at your carbs. I promise not to preach keto, and I'm not. I'm just saying, like, I bet you you're eating 200 carbs. You're not under 100, right? You're not. Or if you just do level 1 and you weigh 300 pounds, you get down to 250 and you plateau and you are tracking and you are doing everything, you need to look at restricting your carbs a little bit further. And you may find that you have to come way down like me, or you may find that like 50 or 75 works. You have to figure that out for yourself, but watch how your clothes fit, watch your weight, and watch how you feel. This is another thing too. If you start waking up with aches in places you didn't used to have them, and I'm not talking like you didn't used to have when you're 25 and you're 55 now, but like, that's odd. Why do I feel achy? You know, and if it's once, maybe you slept funny or something, but if it starts being recurrent, that's inflammation. And there's something that you're eating that's aggravating the inflammation. I don't care if you have an inflammatory disease. If it's more than normal, it's almost always going to come back to your diet. If you have an inflammatory disease, a lot of times it is your diet. Well, I have an autoimmune disease. Oh, great. So you're a pharmaceutical's wet dream. Pharmaceutical company's wet dream. Autoimmune disease, 90% of the shit they advertise on television. It's either vaccines or it's for an autoimmune disease, right? You don't think psoriasis is an autoimmune disease? All of these diseases are autoimmune. They're throwing the body's, you know, natural immune system out of whack. I would even say that because insulin resistance is a hormone disruption disease, it is the body's natural response not working or working improperly. So it's some form of inflammatory, autoimmune, or hormonal-based disease. We can control this with diet. We just have to figure out what works for us. But if you feel pain and aches that are not normal for you, check what you're doing and how far have you strayed from where you should be with your diet. Have your labs done and confer with a doctor that's not a pharmaceutical establishment salesperson. You should interview your doctor. And it's probably the case that most people should have a direct primary care, a DPC. This is a doctor you will pay a small monthly fee to. They will see you anytime you want. If you pick the phone up and call them, they will take a call from you. The one my wife has, he will come to the house. Hasn't needed to, but he will. He's an advocate if you get put in the ER. He's somebody that will talk to the person in the ER treating you and talk doctor to doctor instead of patient to doctor. And you will find that a lot of your DPCs are all in on this type of eating, whether it's keto, carnivore, or simply carb restriction and eating healthy. all in. They're looking for a different type of patient. They're looking for you. And what you might find is with a DPC, this doesn't replace your health insurance, but you could go to a less expensive health insurance plan because they're not going to put anything on your insurance. They're not going to put anything on your shit. And your like lab work from a DPC is super cheap. They're going to order it. You're going to go like LabCorp or something. You're going to walk in, walk out, and you're going to get your lab sent to them and to you. It's probably a better way to go. But at bare minimum, you need a non-establishment idiot doctor. You cannot have an establishment idiot. If your doctor looks at your A1C and it's not even type 2, it's just you're in that pre-diabetic stage, and they start talking to you about Ozempic. Get up, say goodbye, leave. Never, ever, 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 under any circumstances, go back to that doctor. They cannot be trusted. This happened to my sister-in-law. Her body, two doses of Ozempic, her body was wrecked, and the doctors you found now said you should have never even been put on that. You have pancreatitis. You weren't diabetic. You weren't that overweight. And the warning on Ozempic says specifically not to give it to somebody with pancreatitis. My wife's told her she needs to get a lawyer. That's lawsuit city, baby. But it's wrecked her body. She's nice and thin now. She hadn't had a dose of Ozempic in over a year, and she's still fucked from it. And you can't say it wasn't what it was because she wasn't that way. She took an Ozempic injection. She started to feel like shit immediately. The doctor said, well, it's not Ozempic. Take your next dose next month. She did that and went, no, fuck no, I'm done. And it basically has paralyzed her stomach. And she cannot – she's now keto because she ain't got a choice. If she eats any significant amount of carbohydrates, she's sick for a day. Stay away from that shit. No establishment idiot doctors. If they want to start putting you on prescription medications, the first thing you ask is, how long will I be on this? And when they say, well, forever, you need a new doctor. Now, if there's some reason that that makes sense, use your common sense. But this shit, all they want to do is just throw people on these drugs for the rest of their fucking life. That is the goal of the pharmaceutical companies, and they've incentivized with perverse incentives the doctors to do it. You need to stay away from this shit. And you always need to try diet first. It should be let your food be thy medicine, in the words of Socrates. This is the other thing, too. Like I said, if you're at, you know, a birthday party and you want to eat a piece of cake, okay. If it's Thanksgiving and you want to eat some sweet potatoes or you want to eat, you know, some stuffing and gravy and mashed potatoes and more than you normally would on your – okay. Okay, it's not that big a deal. The problem is when special becomes all the time, when there's a birthday party every week, when somebody has a retirement or a birthday or a special thing every fucking week at work, plus you're taking your kid to Billy's birthday party every other fucking week. Like at that point, it stops being special. It just becomes part of your eating pattern, and it's worse. If you are what most people in America are, which is carbohydrate addicted, you need to act like you're in a 12-step program to get off fucking heroin. And you know what any decent sponsor at a Narcotics Anonymous meeting would tell you if they met you and said, yeah, I'm going to be your sponsor. If you told them, well, about once a week I go to a party and all my friends that use drugs are there and they're using drugs and they've told me I can just have a little bit and it's no big deal. You need to not go and not hang out with those people. And if that's what it takes in the very beginning to you develop discipline, then maybe you need to even do that. Most of us, we can be big boys and girls and just say, no, thank you. And if you have that one person, they're usually fat, by the way, and they just, you know, misery loving company. Oh, but it's going to be good. Listen, Bill, Tom, Mary, Sue, whatever the fuck their name is. I need you to stop doing this. I'm doing this for me. And with all due respect, either you're on my side or stay silent. Go eat whatever you want. I don't want to hear it again. Thank you. Be nice, but be firm. Be not. And most people will then, if they have any semblance of normalcy in their fucking brain, bro, he's serious. I need to let this go. And that's the other thing, too. 220 Mind Mix says eat before you go. That's what I had to do. Yeah, eat your food before you go. And like another, like throw that lump of butter on there, man, if you know you're going to get that satiation from that fat, that high quality fat in your body. And then say, you know, I already ate today. You can even lie a little bit. I can't eat that right now. Not because I'm not allowed to, because I'm just not hungry. Thanks. We'll try a piece. I don't want a piece. I know what cake tastes like. You get what I'm saying? You can't let special become weekly. It's not special anymore. What's the frequency? I don't know. You're a grown ass man, but I would say anything more than once every 45 days, you've started to lose the plot there. Once a month, maybe. And then it would still be a very small portion, a very small amount. You have to be careful with that, because what you literally are is an alcoholic hanging out in a bar. And eventually, alcoholics can go to a bar, drink a lime and club soda, hang out with their old friends, and not drink. Not all, but many can. But almost none of them can out of the gate. You've got to separate yourself from those temptations. And people who will try to suck you in, you know, just when I get out, they pull me back in. That's true, and it's more true of food than anything else, because not everybody does drugs. Certainly not everybody deals drugs, Al, right? But everybody eats, and most people eat poorly. And most people want company in their poor decisions because it justifies that it's really okay. Be careful with that. My final thoughts today, do something. Do something. Wherever you are in this, make a decision today, unless you're like optimally healthy, right? I'm going to do a little bit better. I'm going to add this one thing, or I'm going to remove this one thing. I know I shouldn't eat seed oils, and mostly I don't, but I eat this one thing and it's got seed oils in it, it's going to go. You know, I know I shouldn't eat corn syrup, but this one thing I like has corn syrup in it. It's got to go. I got to find another alternative. You know, be careful with things that say sugar free. This is one my wife struggles with, and we haven't gotten completely by it yet. She likes the vanilla creamer shit in her coffee, and she uses the sugar-free, and like the second ingredient on it is corn syrup. I'm like, how is it sugar-free? I know, and I'm not gonna ride her ass about it. I'm not gonna ride your ass about it. But I'm saying, like, look for things. Like, what's the layup? What is the thing in your life from a dietary standpoint that you could get rid of tomorrow, and your life really wouldn't be any worse? And within a week, you won't miss it. Because I'll tell you, the coffee thing. So this is my evolution as a coffee drinker. I still put cream in my coffee. And I do it for a variety of reasons. One is it's a high-quality fat, and I want it in my body. And I like the flavor. But if I go back to, like, in my 20s, I was a typical American coffee drinker. You know, like 2 teaspoons of sugar to a cup of coffee. Or a flavored creamer, which was sugar in another way. Or a milkshake at Starbucks that they called a coffee. And I remember getting to a point where I'm like, I got to cut sugar out. And I remember just simply cutting back on the sugar. So I went from like a 2 teaspoon or 2 packet sugar to 1. And the first time I did, I'm like, well, that's really not that great. And then after a week, I'm like, it's fine. And you know, you go a couple of weeks like that, and then you try it the way you used to. You go, oh my God, that's awful. It tastes like I'm eating sugar, which you are, right? And you're like, oh, that's terrible. So you say to yourself, self, I got down to half. What if I just cut it to 0? So then you take the coffee, you put a little bit of cream in it, and you taste it. You go, ooh. You do that for a week, and you're like, kind of good. And I'm sure you could go all the way to black like that. And what happens is every time you do that, it takes about a week or 2 or 3, you know, of doing that. And then you're like, huh, what is coffee like that has a little bit of sugar? So you put like a half a teaspoon, which was never enough, in the same coffee you've been, and you taste it, you go, oh no. Oh no, I don't want that. That's too sweet. And that is my evolution with coffee. So I would say, like, try that. Like, if you're just, like, if that's one of your vices, sugar and coffee, stop it. But I use Splenda or whatever. Okay, that's even worse in some ways. Whatever it is, just cut the sugar in half, cut it in half again, and then cut it to 0, and then just be a big boy or a big girl and stop being a whiny, sniveling little bitch and do it that way for 2 weeks and see what happens. And after 2 weeks, if you really decide you got to go back to the one level up from where you were, and you might be surprised. And even if you do all that, and you go from two packets of sugar to half a packet, how much sugar did you just cut out of your life? Take those little steps. Do something. Do something. Our national health is in massive decline. It's not little. It's not small. And it's exponential. Like, our health started declining heavily in this country across the aggregate average in 1971. There is no doubt about that. 71 in fiat world is the worst thing that's ever happened in this country. But it was a gradual decline. Mid-80s, I'm a teenager. We got one fat kid in the school. One. Now you're like, if you got a couple skinny kids left in the school, like these kids that are in their teens and they're obese. 1980s, I didn't know anybody with type 2 diabetes. Now like every other person I meet has type 2 diabetes if you ask. It's ridiculous. 40% of the country, 4 in 10, have type 2 diabetes in this country, one way or another. Or are obese, one or the other or both. 40%. Went from 11 to 40 between 1971 and 2021. But the vast majority of the decline in health is in the last 15 years. It's like bad, 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 worse. We've hit a hook. And this goes into really bad shit. This is millions of people either dying or being severely disabled annually in a country with only 330 million people. We're going to get to the point where like either you have diabetes or somebody you care about has diabetes. And that's probably the case for most people already. We need to change this. We're not going to solve the health problem in America by giving people free health care. That's ridiculous. Even if you fully believe, my friend, healthcare is a human right. Okay, I don't do a very good Bernie Sanders, right? Bernie Sanders. But like, even if you believe that, this still is not like just giving people healthcare doesn't fix the health problem. Right? If you have car insurance, great. But if you don't change your oil, your car will blow the fuck up sooner or later. You've got to take care of yourself. We got to start taking care of each other. We have to start having honest conversations like this. We have to stop telling people it doesn't matter what you eat. Just eat less and move more. This is all bullshit. It didn't work. It got us where we are. You can't keep living the way you've been living and expect your life to get better. Please, I'm asking you. I'm asking you today, as your friend, as your podcast host, for some of you as your mentor, care enough about yourself to do this. Care, and it would be, look, I care about my family more than myself. Your family cares about you. Then do it for your kids. Do it for your grandkids. Do it so somebody doesn't have to freaking wrap your disgusting, nasty foot that's soon going to be cut off up for you one day. That your kid is not changing your fucking diaper one day because you didn't take care of yourself. That's how serious this is. With that, before we wrap up, let's go ahead and hear from let's talk about our item of the day. I have the same item of the day. And we talked a lot about eating meats today. So I have the same item of the day as I did yesterday. It's the Meter Block Smart Thermometer. This thing is awesome. Four different probes. They can use one at a time. You can use all four. Cooking four steaks or big, thick pork chops or something. I'm making big, thick pork chops that I cut myself for dinner for Dorothy and I tonight. And I'll pop one in each one. And then I'll know when to pull them and when to let carry over do its job. And you get a perfect cook. There's a lot of others, like it has a phone app. You can set up your cooks on your phone. It's really simple to do. Anybody can do it, even me. But you can also network it to where if you're like doing a long cook on a brisket or a pork shoulder or something, you can be watching the football game and you can be checking on your cook from the couch, even if the grill's way outside or what have you. Definitely check this thing out. And the big reason to check it out, the big reason I have it for you this week, 2 days in a row now, it is on sale for $159. That might sound expensive. This thing retails at $240. It used to retail at $280. And it recently came down in price, and then they put it on sale. I do not know how long the sale is going to last. On Amazon, it is listed as a limited-time deal. That can mean a week. It can mean a month. It can mean a day. You just don't know. A lot of you probably have had your eye on this thing because it is one of those things that's expensive enough that you don't just go, oh, I want it, so I buy it, right? You have to, like, you start breaking $100 and up, you really should think before you buy a thing. So it's like, it's been on the radar. I want this in my life. I want to use it to improve my cooking or whatever. But it's $240. I get it. That's why I hadn't brought it around till recently, even though I own one for like almost 3 years now. But at $159, it's a hell of, in fact, the two probe one instead of the four probe one is also $159 right now. So you can get like basically two probes for free is one way to look at it. The multiple probe thing is awesome because, again, four is a great number because a lot of times when you're cooking steak, you're making four. Or chops, you're making four. Or you're making maybe two roasts, you use two. Big roast, I actually put one in each side to get a better idea of the aggregate average temperature. Set up your cook and run it. So these things are great. Their limitation, the probes are rather thick. They have to be. They have intelligence built into them. So they will not work on thinner pieces of meat, which really don't need a thermometer like this anyway. So this is like your 3/4 to 1 inch and up steaks and chops. Perfect for roasts, chickens, turkeys, all that kind of stuff, duck, name it. But I'm telling you, this has made me a better cook. I bought this for my son last year for Christmas because I knew he would never buy it for himself. And at this price, it is just a hell of a good deal, folks. Now let's take a few questions or comments here and we will wrap up. I'm going to go fast so we don't go too long today. Mr. Fixie question. Well, where do you see AI generated video of Merkins working in assembly factories? Hilarious. I did not see it. And today's episode is not about AI. Antonio says a $25 super chat. Thank you, Antonio. Thanks so much for all your invaluable knowledge and wisdom, Jack. Your podcast completely changed my life and outlook in so many ways. I hope to make TSP workshop next time. So grateful for all you do. Stay well. A little update on that, just for those that haven't heard yet. We are actually moving the location of the workshop. It will not be at my house. It will be 15 minutes from my house at an awesome camp that is managed by a local YMCA. It's called Camp Carter. We're going to have a huge commercial dining hall for presentations and for eating designed for like 500 people. We're going to do probably 100 tickets instead of 50 this year. So a lot of people that haven't been able to come will be able to come because of that move, and it will give us our home back. It's been great. We've done a decade of this. In a decade, we've probably done 30 workshops, but it's 80 people on your property for the better part of a week. And getting ready, it's, you know, there's a half dozen people here for like a full week because they're here several days in advance. So this is going to make my life and Dorothy's life a little easier and let us do a better job for you because we're going to have a full commercial kitchen. We're going to be able to up the game on the food. It's going to be awesome this year. So you have a better chance of getting in. We won't sell out in 5 minutes. Maybe we'll sell out in 15. Scott says the human diet, meat, fish, eggs, vegetation, fruits, nuts, minerals, fungi. That's it. And I would agree. I am not big on the carnivore diet from a standpoint of that's what people should eat. I think it's a great diet for people that want to do it. And I think for certain nutritional and health goals, and for really obese people that want the quick answer and not to have to think much, it's great. Even ketovore will do that for you. Even keto will do that for you if you stick to the other parameters I gave you today. But in the end, can you pick it up off the ground and stick it in your face? And does it grow in nature? If we just did that, like, you know what doesn't grow in nature? Most of the food that we eat from a carbohydrate standpoint. A lot of things that we do grow commercially or we grow in our gardens don't exist in nature in their form, but they exist as an analog. So peppers exist in nature. Tomatoes exist in nature. Most tubers exist in nature in ways that humans can utilize them. Grains do not exist in nature in ways that humans can utilize them in any quantity. The natural grass seeds and things like that, that wheat and rye and barley were derived from, ancient humans did use them some, and that's how they ended up selectively breeding them into modern versions or even ancient versions of grains that we think of as ancient today. They're really not that old. But the reason they did the development of them is they were not really usable. And then the other thing about all those grains, and grains are something I think mostly belong out of your diet anyway. You can't eat grain without significant processing. And what I mean by that is even if you went out into a wheat field and the wheat is ready to come, like the heads are ready to come apart. And you just picked up a bunch of wheat, cut it off with a rice knife, and banged it over a plate. The stuff that falls out, if you eat that, it'll fucking kill you. And I mean physically, mechanically choke you to death. When that chaff gets in your throat, you can't just pick it up and eat it. It has to be harvested at the right time. It has to be then, you know, winnowed and harrowed, and or not harrowed, what is it, where you get all the chaff off and separate. And it has to be ground or cooked. Even like if you buy whole grain wheat from Honeyville or something like that, you can't pick up a handful of that shit and eat it. You'll break your teeth. You'll choke. So when I say you can pick it up and eat it, I mean, literally, you're walking through the woods, there it is, pick it up, stick it in your mouth, and you can eat it. If it doesn't have some kind of toxic or poison or dog didn't shit on it, it won't hurt you. That's what I mean, and I think that's what Scott's kind of saying, and I would agree. Project Walden says, do calories matter? Is a half pound of bacon for dinner stalling my weight loss? So only you can answer if you're overeating from a caloric intake standpoint. If you are still significantly overweight and you're not losing weight and you're otherwise eating really well and you are significantly carbohydrate restricted, which I would say is under 25 net a day. If you've done all that and you're not losing weight, well, then I would say you're probably overeating. When people say calories don't matter, you know, if you're 6 foot, 4 inch tall, Ken Berry slamming iron every day, and you don't have a tendency to overeat when you're on a carnivore diet, you just are naturally restricted without thinking about it. Okay, sure. And that's where Ken and I have this disagreement. Calories are energy. Energy in has an input value to your body. Your body can only eliminate so much of what you eat through waste without dealing with the calories directly. And that number is somewhere around 10%. We can pretty much shit out about 10% of calories undigested and unprocessed. Beyond that, the body has to do something with it. And even though what I said about protein and gluconeogenesis, if you really overdo the protein, you put the body in state, I have to do something with it. I have to do something with it, right? And it can even make too much sugar. Through gluconeogenesis. So it's the same thing Ken say when calories don't matter. When I say protein doesn't matter, it's within the sanity level. So a half a pound of bacon for dinner, it doesn't sound like that much to me. That's a half a pack. If you mean a half a pound before it's cooked, a half a pound of cooked bacon is a lot of fucking calories. So Project Walden, what you need to do is track your weight loss. And I'll tell you, especially when you need to do something differently. You started your diet and your weight came down and down and down, plateaued a little bit, and then it went down, and it plateaued a little bit, and it went down, and it plateaued a little bit, and it went down, 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 just very little, very gradual plateau, and then that's a sustained plateau. Something's holding you back. Now, do you need to not eat that much? Maybe not long duration. Maybe what you need is a two-day fast to kind of kickstart everything, and then be a little bit more restrictive for a couple days when you come back on, and sometimes that'll just kind of unstick. Now, being an honest man, I can tell you there are some people I know that did carnivore or keto for a very long time and were very healthy, but couldn't get to it, and they literally went to a carbohydrate diet that meets my other requirements, and that unstuck them. I can't think of the guy's name, Mandrick, who's been in the Bitcoin space forever. He's in that space. But he's also right now on an 800-calorie-a-day deficit to get that final cut down to the weight he wants. So there's always room to make these adaptations and adjustments. So, you know, I can't really answer the half pound of bacon without knowing half pound cooked, half pound uncooked. What else are you eating? Are you only eating a half pound of bacon for dinner, or are you eating a half pound of bacon on top of a ribeye? Right. And what else are you eating, and what's your total carb intake, and how many times are you eating a day? What is your eating window? Are you basically eating from the time you wake up to the time you go to bed, but you're keto? Like that's it all starts to matter. Right. Anarchy says, thanks for covering this topic. Great info. This diet sounds delicious. $7.77 super chat. Thank you, Anarchy. He's probably talking about was reading the meal plans off. Scott says on reading labels, food doesn't have ingredients. Very interesting. True. You most of the time will not have to read a label if you're buying the kind of food that you should. You don't need to read the label on beef. You don't need a label on chicken. But there are things like, and really what I'm talking about is when you like cheese. Cheese should have milk cultures. Maybe salt. And like if it's like blueberries and cheese or something like that, like, you know, or rosemary and thyme or something. Okay, fine. But that should be it. When you start reading multisyllabic words, it's not food anymore. It's not. And so I'm saying to read labels because I'm not going to say don't eat these things. I'm going to say don't eat things with this stuff in it. And I'm going to let that problem sort itself out because what I try to do with shows like this is give you the freedom to make decisions for yourself. And if you make the decision, I'm not going to eat high fructose corn syrup, I'm not going to eat seed oils, et cetera, then you're going to read and then you're not going to buy the shit that you shouldn't buy. And I don't have to say stay out of the center of the grocery store. I don't have to say that. You'll make those decisions. And you may find some things that are very simple ingredients that fit within your carb restriction level that are organic or natural or locally produced or something. You might find potato chips that are fried in tallow, and as long as you fit it into your world, I'm not going to tell you not to eat it. But he's right. Like, real food doesn't have certainly a long list of ingredients. And most real food has no ingredients because it's the food. A pepper, the ingredients is pepper. We don't put a food label on a pepper, right? A good ingredients of a tomato is a tomato. Food ingredients of a chicken, unless we've injected it with a bunch of shit, is chicken. So I like that comment, Scott. Thank you. American Legend says, is two meals a day with a couple small snacks like mixed nuts a healthy way to go for reducing calories as a fast big eat, as a fast big eater, maybe it means a past big eater. It depends. So the window's more important to me. So two meals a day with two snacks, and the first meal's at 8 in the morning, and the last meal's at 7 at night, is not two meals a day. It's three. You've just broken your lunch into two snacks, and you put them back together, you're back to three meals a day. If you're eating in a window that makes sense, you probably won't have time for snacks. And you won't have a need for snacks. Let me put it a different way. You are a fucking grown-ass man who changes his name two or three times during an episode of the show. You move in and I don't understand. You come in and out with different accounts. And I know it's all you. I don't know why you do that. That's your thing. Maybe you're a grown-ass man. You don't need a fucking snack. Snacks are for freaking second graders, so they'll take a fucking nap so the teacher can take a break. That's what a snack is. You don't need a snack. If you're eating a couple, three meals a day, you don't need a snack. Now, if you occasionally have one, I'm not going to berate you. But if it's like every day I have to have a snack, you are a child. You're not a grown man. Start acting like a grown-ass man. Project Walden says another question. Supplement with apple cider vinegar and water, yes or no, specifically for weight loss. Okay, apple cider vinegar will do absolutely nothing for your weight loss. They won't. Apple cider vinegar won't do much of anything for you. If you like it, doesn't hurt anything. Pretty neutral. But all the super health benefits, it's all bullshit. I'm sorry. I know I've got a bunch of people mad now. People that listened to this whole thing and were happy, now you're angry with me. Because I know, but what research do you have? What proof do you have? What mechanism is there for it to do anything? Now, if it's got the mother, it's like a natural, there is at least some probiotics involved and whatever. But that's probiotics. That's not apple cider vinegar is vinegar made from apple cider. It's really not much different than, you know, any vinegar. It's just vinegar. It's an acid. It's very useful as a cook for certain flavors, for an acid cut against certain other things. When something needs acid, it's one of your options. But in of itself, it is not a health food. I'm sorry. Lynn says, artificial sweeteners and caffeine seem to be triggers for my blood sugar to go up. Are there any sweeteners that are okay? I want to say yes, but maybe not for you. Humans are the same but different man, in the words of Thomas Chong. And that means that I might use an artificial sweetener and have no blood sugar response, and you might have one. And it can be, like some people theorize that it is something that tricks your body into believing you've had sugar. Also, some of the artificial sweeteners are not artificial sweeteners. I think it's, it starts with an M. I'm not really sure if that's right, but I think it does. But there is a artificial sweetener, and like the Russell Stover candies for diabetics, like some lawyer needs to sue their ass into oblivion. But it's almost all of the candies that are marketed as no sugar, diabetic candy, uses it. Whichever, it's not xylitol. I think it's malitol. It might be malitol. That literally I've watched people with the continuous glucose monitors eat it. Boom. The spike they get is actually more than from the same amount of real sugar. Like table sugar caused less of a blood sugar spike than the maltose. That's what it is. It's maltose. Now, at the same time, I've seen these people do those same tests. There's the one group, it's a husband and wife, keto something, they call themselves, and they've done a bunch of this, and they did it with like all the different sweeteners, and they did each day. They got up, they did a baseline, then they ate the thing. And almost everything else didn't spike their blood sugar. Some did a little bit, but I'll tell you what didn't at all was stevia. So you might try that. But what I'll encourage all of you to do is retrain your taste buds. The reason you need the sugar, the sweetener, is because you've conditioned your taste buds to that. And if you just stop for long enough, you'll find not wanting it, or you'll find if you do use stevia, instead of 3 drops out of the dropper, you'll use 1. And anything beyond that, you'll be like, I can't eat this. It's you have to trust me. It's one of those things like, the person that smokes their whole life, right? But the first time they smoked, it was like, and they forced their way through it to be cool with their friends, and now they're a smoker. If they quit smoking long enough, they may still crave the nicotine. And if they smoke a cigarette again, they may get the feeling that's good. But it ain't going to taste, because inhaling tobacco smoke, doesn't, especially cigarette tobacco smoke, doesn't taste good. And it won't taste good to them, but they'll adapt to it much more quickly than before. That's a lot how the sugar works. Like the more you cut the sweetening. Now, here's another thing, though. A lot of times people say that it's artificial sweeteners and caffeine that trigger their blood sugar to go up. But what they really mean, so this sounds like a coffee drinker using some sort of artificial sweetener. What they really mean is because I ate sugar, I ended up eating more food in total. And so you have to be careful that it's not actually triggering you to eat more of things. You think, well, that's pretty low carb, but not when you eat 12 of them. So that's another question you can only really answer for yourself. I'm going to look to see if there is any more questions. There's a couple comments, but I don't think any of them really need. This one I'll read. Matthew says, I think what drives me nuts is the most is trying to find sausage without corn syrup. Hard to find. Time to make it myself. I'm a truck driver. I completely agree with that. I find it to be reprehensible that you go buy a bratwurst and has corn syrup in it. There's no need for that. This is the food cabal. This is government subsidy run amok. This is perverse incentives. They probably are making money by putting the corn syrup in the sausage. If they took the corn syrup out of the sausage, nobody would even notice. The other side of that. If that's what you're stuck with, and that's you like sausage, and that's what you can find, it's not that much. It is a very, very small amount, but it would still be better not to have it. So you can find some varieties of sausage that don't have it. If you mean breakfast sausage, bro, right? I get like links and all. I love to make sausage. It's one of my passions. Even some of my recipes do use a very small amount of real sugar, for various reasons with curing. But in general, I use none, but I get that it's a lot of work. You have to love it to want to do it. If you mean breakfast sausage, it's as simple as pork, seasonings, mix, portion, freeze. You have time for that. So I'll give you a pass on bratwurst, Italian sausage, case sausage, all of that. I will give you no pass. I don't care how many trucks you drive on breakfast sausage. You can do that. There's a recipe in the MSB with a spreadsheet. You stick in how much you want to make, and it changes all the ingredients for you. It is a 10-minute process to make 10 pounds of sausage, 10 one-pound packages, or 7.5 pounds or whatever you want to portion it out, and freeze it, and then take it out as you need it. It is very, very simple and very, very easy. Lynn says coffee and creamer is kryptonite for her. I'm sorry, Lynn, or it's not her, it's him. I'm looking at the icon now. There's Lynn's of both, right? Anyway, I'm sorry to hear that, Lynn. You're going to have to work on that yourself. It's good that you know that, though. It's good that you know that, but be careful that you're not actually doing other things because of the artificial sweetener. Because I found that a lot. I found that people that give up artificial sweeteners will then modify their diet without intending to, and they'll eat less. Real quick, I'll finish with this, and then I got to wrap up because I thought we'd go 1:30, not at 2 hours today, and we're at 1:50 now. There is that innate evolutionary component that we do not find sweet and fat in nature together at the same time, except in very rare overlaps of the prime of seasons where you might have berries growing like crazy in the field while the salmon are coming upstream. Very rare. So our bodies metabolically and just straight up adaptation over time know, our intrinsic knowledge, sugar, fat together, eat, because what it means is you're at the peak of something and a lean period is coming. And so we are, and this is where the bliss point in food chemistry comes from. We are triggered biologically to eat a lot when those tastes come together. So if you're eating or you're drinking coffee, and in that coffee you're using artificial sweetener and something like cream, you got fat and sweet together. Even if that's what you're, all of a sudden now, okay, you are eating and consuming other things. Or this is the other option. You're a truck driver. You're trying to stay awake. You're drinking coffee. And now you're putting an artificial sweetener in the coffee and a fat. And if you had 2 cups of coffee, it might be no big fucking deal. But is that what you're doing? Or are you drinking like 4 giant cups of coffee with that shit in it? The quantity can matter as well. With that, I'm going to wrap up. Thank you to everybody today. Thank you for the folks who gave me super chats. It's one thing to be told you're great and all, but like somebody sends you their money, that means that they saw value in what you did. So thank you so much for that. Remember, if you want to share value for me, you can do that on Fountain or on the other Podcast 2.0 apps as well, or on the Noster Network as well if you want to share value for value. And I always try to send some value back to people as well. Tomorrow we have a pretty cool interview. I know it's good, but I don't remember what it's about. Oh, I know what it's about. It's about a person moving from employment through side hustle to a business. And that means that tomorrow when you tune in to watch this, it'll be a fake name. You won't know any different. And probably just like a picture or an icon on the other side, because he don't want to get caught by his employer is being in this transition. And I can't say that's not a risk if you're ever on like my podcast or anybody's, if you're in that transitional stage, because expert council member Matt Sersley, who now has another job, and they know he has a side hustle and they don't care. He did lose his job he had when he came on the show as a guest because somehow it got back to his boss that he had this side hustle thing going on. So that's a legitimate concern. We'll talk about how to make that transition tomorrow. Thursday expert council Q&A, Friday flashback, and then we'll do her all over again.
They said you should have a house the American way. Dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.